Party way, party way, party way, party way. Party way.
Well, hello, everybody. I have a very special show today because a guest is joining me. And the thing I like about a long introduction like this is my guest is already here but being very quiet. That's the thing about radio. I could keep going and maybe never introduce my guest, and you just have to take it on faith that they're here.
Oh, yes, I am.
No, that's a fake guest. That's just me doing a voice. Well, if you guessed that my guest, very similar words, is Vicky. Oh, there, Vicky made a Vicky noise. And so you, if you can identify birds by their call, you would know Vicky by her. Yeah. Yeah. Hello, Vicky Bennett.
Hello, Hearty White.
We are on the radio now, and Vicky is back in London, and I'm back in Kentucky. But we were just together at the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign.
Add applause.
Now, I think it's some kind of Mandela effect, but I would swear to God it used to be the University of Illinois, Champaign-Urbana.
Possible.
But no, it's Urbana-Champaign. Is it? Was it never the other?
When people say, I'm sure people, when I said where I was going, I said it was Champaign-Urbana.
Uh-huh.
But is the university called Urbana-Champaign?
I think it is.
And is it Urbana or Urbana?
I know.
I say
I
Urbana.
Know.
I say
urban. The word urban.
Yeah.
Urbanana. Urbanana. Urban, it's a contraction of urban banana.
It's the University of Banana.
The Urban Banana University, It was originally called. And that, what goes better with an urban banana, which is a euphemism for something, than champagne?
Yes.
I think an urban banana is a J. That's what it is, a joint.
Yes.
I'm having an urban banana.
And we bathe in the
You know
the
what
bubbles.
Would go good with it? Champagne.
Yeah, the bubbles.
But we didn't drink any champagne while we were there, but we felt like celebrities because you were staying at the historic Erlanger House.
Open up Erlanger. And taste the moment. This time the best is just what you deserve.
Now it's time for Erlanger. Erlanger from Joseph Schlitz. Beer born of Klages barley and Hallertau hops. More expensive than most.
Wanna
and
fill
only
your
buys.
When you want to fill your life up
how many
to the very brim.
Come
and taste the moment. Erlanger.
Go stand a tasting of the moment. Go scrounging around the pot in the pit that I was around. People glanced at me and glanced at me. And I got myself in trouble for saying things that I should never have said. Out into the moment and taste the length of what goes on. Taste the length of what goes on. The beer as if you wouldn't go. And then all of a sudden it became an expansive situation where I was actually marching around.
And what lets me describe the Erlanger House. It is designed by the architect Jack Baker for University of Illinois, head of the dance department, Margaret Erlanger, in the early 1960s. It is an example of crazy-ass modern. Apparently, Jack had recently been to Japan and was kind of inspired by that simplicity and those lines and everything. So he made a big Chicago brick square kind of building, largely windowless, but for two enormous windows that look out onto trees. And but what's really remarkable, and has a huge ceiling, and the bedroom is a loft, but what we were there for mainly was this architectural feature, which is specifically of that era, and that is the conversation pit.
Mm-hmm.
It had a conversation pit, and kids, if you've never seen one, it's stepped down in a little like a small swimming pool or something, in the size of a children's pool or something. And there's couches all around there, and you can sit in sort of a semicircle. and all face one another.
Mm-hmm.
So that you can have a conversation instead of, you know, sitting where you're all facing the same direction or something like that. And it's conducive, and it's supposed to be a design that inspires interaction between the humans sitting there.
Mm-hmm. And it had color-coded cushions as well, which went from dark brown to yellow, and they were lined up in order.
All the warm colors, though. There were no blues or greens.
No, it was autumn, and outside, all the leaves were brown. Cue the music. Yes, and the first night we stayed there, it poured with rain, and you heard the rain on the roof and landing on every single leaf. It was really loud. It was amazing.
I've never been, it was a house, if you ever, in the 60s, if you ever went over to your successful dentist's house, you'd say, oh, you were very, it had that vibe, right? You know, mid-60s intellectual persons, and that's what it, exactly what it was. It was the abode of a dancer. Now, there was a few reasons that we were all there, but I'm going to make it sound as romantic as possible. It was a sort of pilgrimage, and we'll discuss the details of that later. But one of the interesting things about this house is it had a very notable guest who happened to, in the years 1967 to 1969, do a guest residency there, and that person was...
The sound experience, which I preferred to all others, is the experience of silence. And the silence almost everywhere in the world now is traffic.
John Cage and
and
Merce Cunningham.
Yes.
Is that a moment of silence?
Thanks, everybody. Thanks for joining us. and now it really begins.
There are two things that don't have to mean anything. One is music, and the other is laughter. Don't have to mean anything, that is, in order to give us very deep pleasure.
He did some performances there.
He did. He was. He did two big performances. One in. You say the name of the place.
It's the Stock Pavilion. So it's where they have parade in horses or cows or anything. It's a big. It looks like an auditorium, right? With a circle in the middle, but that's where all the livestock goes parading in and out. You know, you've seen these at like agricultural fairs and everything. It's a stock pavilion.
Yeah, it looks like somewhere that you might have an auction or something.
And the piece there was called Music Circus.
Who wants to see you?
It was a kind of happening event where everyone played. And you walked through it and you captured the sound and the atmosphere of... So it was a kind of immersive experience with real people interacting and playing together.
And the other piece that it did afterwards, did in the... Is it the basketball auditorium?
Yes.
Or something?
Harpsichord.
And it was called Harpsichord, no vowels.
Yes.
Right? Is that correct?
Yes.
It's spelled like
H-R-P-S-I-C-O-R-D.
If you can read this, you know that no vowel writing is like a code. I can't read it.
Well, he was into that, wasn't he? Yeah.
And that was a bunch of harpsichords.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Playing at once in different spaces.
Yes. Don't ask me to elaborate, though.
No, I wasn't there. So John Philip Sousa's mentoree or acolyte or whatever came there and did something. So the John Philip Sousa archives, is that not correct? That's how I remember it being told, but I was glazing over.
And then something else happened as well.
I got the Monty Python theme in my head, and then that was it. I was done. Also, because this university had some of the first synthesizers and weird electronic music labs, there was a device there, still working, kind of, called the Salmar Construction. And it looked like somebody was trying to make a time machine.
Yes.
And what this thing is an automatic music composing machine. And we have AI now. This is AI's R2-D2 grandfather, and coincidentally, it sounds almost exactly like R2-D2.
And the cables underneath, when you lift its sort of tabletop up, it's when you lift its skirt, it's like a telephone exchange.
Yes, it looks like an old, there's a million wires. I don't know how anybody could put it together or anything. Mm. And it just, you turn it on, and I think maybe you can, it goes. You can also, like, complete contacts or clocks in it.
Well, you put one hand on a metal bar in the front, and then you become the connector to metal buttons to make the sound, and it goes...
Right. I was staring so hard at, what's his name, Fogelberg's guitar, that I couldn't, focus.
I was looking at the Frank Zappa scrapbook.
Yes, yes. He came there once, and it said the crowd enjoyed his cynicism, which is a very subtle observation. That was the headline I saw in that scrapbook. But Dan Fogelberg's guitar, I guess, is from there.
Yes.
And probably him, too.
Yes.
So, yeah, it was a fascinating...
And REO Speedwagon.
REO Speedwagon dropped out of that very school.
Oh, mind your step, everybody. Get inside the situation where we're all throwing out words at each other. Words that don't mean nothing to each other. Except when there's a manager on blah, blah, blah. And when you've got yourself all over selfie, got your maimants down, and you know it's going to be a moment that nobody could have hung around. Yeah, crashing down the moment off the plane is now around. And bouncing around the brotherhood of where you thought you sound. Could have been inside the moment which you tasted with your tongue. You tasted with your tongue as you opened up inside the world of all the time of where your great brother was going crazy for yourself. And now it's nothing else but actually having a beer together all inside the pit. Inside the pit of where the moment goes, his beer, and he's got a really expensive one. He's calling Erlanger.
When we first arrived at Erlanger House, it was nighttime and raining, and I at least had jet lag, and we realized how many ways we could fall to our death inside the building.
It was very much a house that was maybe art first. And then
art first, dancers second.
Right.
People with jet lag third.
It was designed for somebody with very good balance.
Yes.
Because if you have any kind of thing where you might teeter over, I don't know, you know, inner ear thing, alcoholism, you're going to plummet off the there weren't like a lot of railings or anything. And then there were sort of inexplicable gaps in the floor.
Yeah, random holes in the floor.
I mean, a child could fall through. Yeah. Its head would break the fall, but then that's gruesome too. So you want it to either go all the way through or not at all.
But apparently a cat had stayed there and loved it.
Indeed. In fact, it was almost designed like one of those carpet-covered cat contraptions.
Yes.
You know, cat merch bow?
Cat
A cat merch bow.
Yeah.
Isn't that what they are?
Yeah.
I think Kurt Schwitters came up in the conversation a couple times, so I just wanted to toss that out there.
As did Pop-Tarts.
Pop-Tarts did? That's right. That's exciting. Seinfeld made a whole movie out of them.
Sobotnik came up twice.
Mort Sobotnik.
And Larry David and Curb Your Enthusiasm many times.
Yes. Because we were doing a lot of cringing.
We were.
Or something. One another.
Mainly our own lack of knowledge about things in the company of geniuses.
It did feel like, what's y'all's sitcom with the buckets, bouquet? What's that one? Keeping up appearances. It felt like the buckets go to the university and talk to them.
Absolutely.
I was trying to sit there. In fact, I even brought a turtleneck. Because I was thinking, well, I should look like an intellectual. Yeah. My thing was like, I'm a scholar, but I've forgotten a lot.
Yeah, already. but you counteracted that with wearing a Jacques Tati coat.
I did. And I was trying to be.
There were those chairs in there that go. When you sit.
There's
on
such
them.
A fine line between performance art and awkward self-consciousness. I just thought I'll just act odd, and they'll think I'm, you know, oh, that fella, he's.
And you were wearing a matching hat. And to your long beige tatty coat, and
it's
then
very...
later in the week, I saw you in the down the other end of the university corridor, and it was just you were Jacques Tati in that one where he's in the waiting room that's all glass. Is that parade
or playtime?
Playtime.
Yeah. Yes. So playtime was with us the whole visit. I thought there was a lot of things were very playtime-ish. The thing that reminded me of playtime and Tati was that a lot of the design did not feel like it was designed for humans to really be part of. You know what I mean? That was the design. Yeah. It was beautiful, but it maybe took precedent over comfort. Although I do believe Barcelona chairs are pretty darn comfortable, to be honest.
They are. I mean, it was absolutely the most beautiful place to be. And to start with, you felt like you were in the way of the building when you went inside. But then after the first 24 hours, you became part of the building. It's like it absorbed you in the most wonderful way. And you the way you behaved, like in the conversation pit, we were kind of doing the thing that it was designed to do. People were coming and going and visiting, and we were all talking, and the conversation was going all over the place, but it was always an immersive conversation in the same way that you actually go down into the pit to have it. You literally immerse in the pit.
It is very much like being a trapped miner. You know, it is like a pit, like we are trapped, we're in a mine. No, it's
with,
not like
with
that
cushions.
At all. Yes, but it is the pit is focuses it. It's definitely like a lens. It's like you're in that pit. You're not going to have separate conversations because you're all in one another's faces.
Yes,
and so we're not going to go into any great detail, but we met with a variety of thinkers and. Thinkers. That is nothing. I can only get more specific.
Thinkers
but
and doers.
Scholars. Scholars and thinkers.
Thinkers, doers, drawers. See, this is how we felt. Was like,
right. So, oh my goodness. So, tell me more. It was that part of it.
Oh, and it was definitely My Dinner with Andre came up.
My Dinner with Andre came up a lot, except we were just the, we weren't the full Wall of Sean. We were just the Tell Me More Wall of Sean.
Oh my God,
Tell Me More. I just need one that, I'm sure somebody's got a doll where you just pull the cord and it says that, right?
Yeah.
God. Well, tell me some of the other things you did with your group.
And I think I need to say the premise of going in there was sort of part of a, with, you know, that I'm recording conversations at the moment like I am right now.
Right. You're doing a piece.
You're doing a bit.
I'm doing a thing,
a big sound thing, mm-hmm. where I'm going to bring together and collage all these conversations. And the people that were coming in, I think we should mention our wonderful host, Kevin Hamilton.
Absolutely.
Who enabled it. He has been amazing. Thankfully, we worked out pretty quickly how terrible I am at hosting any kind of anything in terms of talking to people and being able to make those connections with anything other than just my brain. As soon as I start talking,
you're a little too zen to lead a meeting. Because you're just like, you know, should we begin? And you're like, what's the beginning, really?
And then I'm like, well,
haven't we already begun? And will we never actually begin? And so that's just a practically speaking, it's hard.
You also commented that I kept saying, well, you know, everything's like that.
I know you do that. I love that. So, I like when you do it just to an absurd extent, you know?
Patience, my son. To summon your power for the conflict to come, you must first have power over that which conflicts you.
Okay, am I the only one who finds these sayings just a little bit formulaic? If you want to push something down, you have to pull it up. If you want to go left, you have to go right.
Your temper is very quick, my friend. But until you learn to master your rage...
Your rage will become your master? What you were going to say, right? Right?
Not necessarily.
You know, this is actually like everything.
Right, exactly. It's wonderful because that was sort of the essence of the philosophical thing we were getting at, is the everything and nothing at the same time thing.
Yeah. And very often in many of the conversations, it was that how everything and nothing are both existing at the same time. Through time and space. And everything, a lot was to do with relativity, wasn't it?
Yeah, and sometimes, like, you have to trick people. Like, I believe, ultimately, that we were doing that thing for its own sake. That there really wasn't any... That the subterfuge was that we were trying to gather information or work through these ideas or anything. But I think that was BS. I think it was happening. It was just like, let's see what happens. Because, you know, expectations are useless and things like that, and you're only going to be disappointed. But if your expectations are just to complete an experience that goes on this long, you're going to get it.
Yeah, you have to have a reason. You have to make, you know, you have to have the conditions.
Yeah,
and so that
for
means
squares, for the squares.
Yeah, so you need the reason for doing something, but then
we don't
after
need
that,
a reason. Do you need a? I mean, you got to trick yourself maybe a little bit.
Well,
maybe we do need reasons.
Well, you make up a reason to make things happen.
I'm going to tell you what mine is, and I don't know if I shared it this week, but mine's always been deadline. Mm. I don't have a reason beyond that.
Well, there you go. I mean, you know, we
because
had
if
to...
my reason is always somebody else's reason. Like, why would I have my own reason? It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I know, but this is, you know, you've got to get on the plane. You got to get in the car.
Because someone has asked me. I have to be asked.
And Kevin really gave us an amazing timetable.
Yes.
Of things that we were doing. I mean, it was just full of talking, and we were saying, I don't ever talk this amount. And I was saying, I'm not going to talk for a week when I get home. But it, in the best possible way, that you go into the pit and mm-hmm. you have these amazing interactions and all these bridges emerge, you know, over these wonderful lakes full of lotus flowers and lilies and things. And then you come out of the lotus flower lily pit, and then in the morning you wake up and... all this stuff, you have to start writing it down really, really quickly.
I mean,
that after the last day, I woke up with Say Hello, Wave Goodbye by Soft Soul in my head. And it's like, I don't know why. And then we'd been talking about ideas, you know, that what an idea is and how ideas emerge and how we use them and give them away and how it's how we have to keep those connections open. And we were making analogies to that all week. And then so this, you know, this amazing but quite, you know, cheesy song by Soft Cell comes into my head. And it's the whole thing is, I never knew you, you never knew me, say hello, goodbye. It's about ideas.
It is a perfect day. Sangria or no sangria? Gosh, when you're with friends, everything does seem just right, doesn't it? Just a perfect day. Go to the John Philip Sousa Museum. About Cage and Cage, and then to the business office. It's such a perfect day at the University of Illinois. I'm glad to spend it with you. Oh, such a perfect day. I just keep some reason, we started singing Lou Reed's Perfect Day.
Perfect. And it's still in my head, by the way.
Okay. So yes. I was, as I got thinking, I was like, who's he talking to? And then I started singing the song to myself and just changing it. First, I made it drugs. Yeah. So, hey, it's Perfect Day, you know, yeah. Me and heroin in the park. So, but then I thought, like, it could be a person. It could be anything. And it could also be an idea. But, because it kind of has a melancholy feel. And we sort of sang it at the end of talking about all these ideas on this really off-key piano in this beautiful place that was clearly kind of dated. And it just felt like we were at the at a funeral for sort of intellectual idealism.
Open up and taste the moment. It's time for you to disown what you couldn't breathe. The way the genes work and they cannot be decided upon. In the conscious moment of corporeal existence, you have to get back on the throne of God to tell him that you don't want to be someone that you haven't had any choice to be. But your brother's coming back off the plane and you're going to make him drink all this beer that you nobody should be drinking it, because it's awful beer. This is awful beer. Oh, please don't let me drink. Open up, 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 open up. Used to have Donny Osmond on my wall next to the Jackson 5. Used to buy them in a magazine called Looking in the post office up the slide. And I never got any part of it because it was pin-ups on the wall. Open up. I used to speak to them at bedtime. I used to say, open up, open up, open up, open up, open up, open up, open up like it's 1999. 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 Open up like hour, 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 hour. There's a moment. What's a moment? In the manage of time, what's a moment? In the scheme of things in time, is it a moment that you can really find yourself inside or outside? Are you invited to the big mansion of the person who has been troubling you, oh, for so long? It's been a disaster. Nobody could have even predicted how bad things could have got this
way. So I was sort of like savoring it like you do a candy and just taking my time on it.
Yeah.
And so when you do that, you become more aware of really small things become precious too. Like anywhere you go, you run an errand to a grocery store or something, and you tend to remember every bit of it.
Yeah. And radio actually was a big part of us going there, because Kevin, I believe, discovered both of us through listening to WFMU.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, this is all because, I mean, at least me, I was definitely just repping the station. So, yeah, and that was, anybody who knew me only knew me because they're one of many FMU listeners across the world.
Mm-hmm. And also, we, one of the first things we did when we got there was go on the local radio station, didn't we?
I know. And it was just like in a storefront. And you could see it from the... Oh, that was great. You could see the booth from the street. And it was this station that's a community station that's been there going since 1981. And...
And what's the name? What was the name of the station again?
WEFT.
Thank you. I'm really glad you remembered that.
And and we were on the air with Jason and Shimmick, and they had, I guess we interrupted their like avant-garde jazz show or something.
Yeah, and brought the tone down a little, didn't we, by going in there? But they warmed to us, didn't they?
Yes, I thought they were. Oh, they were very gracious. Because we bum rushed their radio show.
We totally did.
Hi, you don't know who we are, but
bum rushing the radio.
You're gonna put us. You're gonna put us on the air. See, we're a big deal from out of town. See, that's what it felt like. But they were very. They were so nice.
And wasn't that just the experience with everyone? I mean, just everyone was so warm towards us, and just sort of the. You know, I mean, that town, I had no idea there was like something like 50,000 students
in
Urbana. And they were, the people were so kind and smart,
but not
arrogant or not proprietary, you know, which is a big part of what we're talking about, is the way that we all connect, you know, but without overprotecting ourselves in proprietary kind of ways. You know, you've got to protect yourself, obviously, but
right,
you know,
and everybody even had all kind of disclaimers or managed expectations about their own extensive knowledge. You know, you'd always like, you know, physicists telling you that, you know, I don't know anything about physics, really, you know, knowing the limitations of the, so a lot of humble people, no arrogant types. Everybody was that was fantastic, seeing people who know it a lot but weren't sort of full of themselves or were willing to sit down, because I've got nothing to teach them, except, but I do, and your individual experiences a lot, you know, because some folks who sat down were from other countries. So people, if you're from another country, just my experience of living here, and say, well, what I have in the morning is donuts. Well, that's information to them. So it doesn't have to be, you know, of something you learn from books, or, you know, not everybody has to be at the same level of learnedness. You know, we can't all know everything. So you do have something to share. You should never be intimidated by somebody else's credentials or academic knowledge. So it's a blessing to be in the presence of somebody that you can ask questions of whom you can ask questions.
Well, I think, you know, people start. Sorry. People start, you know, I forgot what I was going to say now. I've got jet lag.
I know, because of my doofusing.
Yeah, you were.
I apologize. That's the thing I had to worry about, too. I was like, oh, don't be an ass.
Yeah.
Because that's an inclination I had.
What were we saying?
I know. See, I felt like disruptive there, too. I didn't want to. Because I kept. A lot of times I'm thinking. People are talking, and I'm thinking of jokes, and I know that's wrong.
Well, there became a point where I had to close my eyes a few times to understand people, because I've got my eyes closed now. It's like it's a lot easier to close your eyes and have a conversation, because you go into the more dreamy bit of your mind, don't you, when you close
your eyes? Yes, and also, like, if you're somebody who's I don't know what it is. I don't know what to attribute it to. But people's faces and their expressions, and more annoyingly, their micro expressions, scream to me. So when I'm speaking to somebody, I apologize for reading you. But if you're trying to conceal something, I'm afraid sometimes I see it unless I look away. And audiences
what
are the same way, which is
like,
why I'm a terrible performer. So
what you mean,
what
like when
to,
they roll their eyes at you? You mean that
right? Exactly. Yes. So you know, like I've been on the stage, not many times, but when it's at Monty Hall, you can see maybe the first two rows. Well, the first two rows at Monty Hall are usually my friends and intimates, and then everybody else is in darkness. But we did a question and answer in a auditorium theater that sat about 100, 150.
Yeah.
And then we sat, like, you know, in front at the where the professor stands and did a Q&A. We talked to one another and about your film that had just screened. And everybody was lit like they were on camera. You know, you saw every single face. And for me, that's just a nightmare. You know,
yeah.
Because even though I'm trying not to, I'm absolutely becoming hypnotized by the gaze of other humans.
Yeah. Well, what was funny with that also was, you know, there were like over 100 people there, and it was like amazing because our expectations have to be low, don't they? You know, so we're not disappointed. But so were a lot of people there, all of whom Kevin seemed to know, which was quite remarkable. But we started making analogies about things because, you know, you use metaphors to make the connection between the essence of what you're talking about and externalizing it into what people can understand. But I was unfortunate enough to make one analogy about, we were talking about the way that birds flock together and that one might leave. I can't remember what we were saying.
Murmuration. Yeah,
Murmuration.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, for instance, and I pointed up and I said, if one person leaves, they might all follow. And it so happened that I pointed exactly where a whole row of people were leaving.
Yes.
And apparently in the audience, people were looking at each other like, should we all go?
I know. It's a time to go. That would have been crushing. It wouldn't have been me. I would have taken that all on. It would be so obviously be me, though.
Because
I had commented on it, I think, was the... Because I start talking to people.
What were we saying about
the birds? I don't know, but I'm not a stand-up comic, but I have their fragile ego. So, like, it's impossible not to say something to... If you have a mic and someone's walking away from you, oh, it's so hard not to say something.
Yeah, it's like, oh, was it me that I said something? And then
right.
It was,
cause
it
you
was really
apologize.
Unfortunate. It was very
I'm
unfortunate because on one side at the front, there were like two rows of people and then they all got up and left, didn't they? And then you're just looking at, it's like, how many more people are going to, and it turned out they were an evening class, so they had to go to the next class.
They were an evening class and they had to get to dinner, a scheduled dinner.
Yeah,
but
imagine how awkward it must have been for them to leave after we'd made the analogy of everyone leaving
right.
because one person had.
Yeah. I know. I just went through everything I had said previously to them and thought, did I say the wrong thing? Is it me?
Afterwards, I was thinking, our chairs were positioned to face the audience rather than each other.
I know, but... No, they were angled. They were like
were they?
Talk show angled. Yeah. They were like actors theater. You know, like the James Lipton or their interview angled.
Yeah.
So they could see our three-quarter profile.
Because my neck was hurting because we sat in the front row and we watched my film.
Maybe they were maybe a little too facing forward.
Yeah.
But,
because at one point we were talking about turning them, weren't we?
Yeah, that's probably why people were leaving. Because maybe we start just talking to one another and it wasn't about your work. You know what I hate about tea? Yeah, I don't know if we did that or not. Oh, this makes us. I hate to sound so self-conscious or unprofessional, but hey, that's reality.
Yeah.
But it was really. It's lovely to share things, though. I just felt like everybody should get a chance to walk into a classroom, no matter who you are, what you've done, and for the students should be forced to ask you something.
Yeah,
it's
because
so
they
great
they were
for
shy.
Everybody.
They were shy.
Well, they were
they?
Shy, and also
yeah.
I was like, you know, I don't know that I have anything to say, but like I've made so many mistakes. That's got to be useful.
But John Cage, I have nothing to say, and I'm saying it.
Right. Hey, I had some So, I won't say who it was, but we met somebody who had some suggestions for some future John Cage performances.
Uh-huh.
And largely, they were based on puns.
Yes.
But it gave me an idea for one. So I'm going to pitch you a John Cage-inspired performance, okay? It happens at the University of Illinois Stock Pavilion. Mm-hmm. That's one. All right?
Mm-hmm.
Should I tell you the name of it at the end after I describe it to you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. 100 chickens. And each chicken has a speaker on it.
Mm-hmm.
And the speaker has a different music or sound or spoken word. And the chickens just run around, and you walk around the space. You know how big it is, right? Mm-hmm. You walk around there with all the chickens who are running around in all sorts of directions.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called Cage Free.
Right.
Like the egg chickens.
Uh-huh.
All right. And the chickens are, that's it.
Right. And how long will it take to organize that?
It's not doable. Here's why it's not doable.
Okay.
And I know this for a fact. So when you do something at a university with animals, good luck.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying. You can't touch them. You can't hurt them. You can't strap speakers to them.
No.
But by God, I could do it here. I know I could do it at somebody's farm here. They go, oh, you can use my chickens.
Well, the best thing about conceptual art,
it wouldn't hurt them to put a little.
It's much better to come up with the idea and not do it.
I agree. Well, it's just a pun. If you do an idea based on a pun, that seems
Mind you, I did come up with a pun in the conversation pit that I was so pleased with. I repeated it over and over again for several days. Robot plant.
Yeah, you did kept saying it even if it didn't fit in the conversation.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, because we were talking about automated musicians or something.
Can I talk about the piano that was in Erlanger House?
Yes.
I really
the most profound, the low A was the most profoundly out of tune key. It was a whole full step out of tune, which is very strange.
By the way,
it must have had trauma.
I have a microphone recording of all of that, which you can share or not share.
Walked into a church, I passed along the way,
and I got down
on my knees and began to pray. Oh, the preacher loves a cold. He knows I'm gonna stay. California dreaming on a winter's day. All the leaves are brown, the leaves are brown, and the sky is gray. It's gray. I've been for a walk, been for a walk on a winter's day. Our version is kind of more Gwilly-esque. It was nice. Well, you know, there's all tuned pianos. I mean, they don't all sound the same, obviously, but a detuned piano, because each key has so many strings, right? Mm-hmm. No two detuned pianos sound the same, and it isn't something that you can even plan. But if you never played piano and y'all just walk by one casually. Let's just take right in the middle, you press middle C. Well, there's a hammer that's hitting three strings.
Yeah.
That's the note. So all three strings have to be C. But sometimes they're slightly off, not even a full half step. Just they're not resonating at the same frequency.
Mm-hmm.
And so you get other things going on. And the bigger strings only have two big fat ones. But... So if one of those are out of tune, it's like super out of tune, and one goes there. Mm. When you have three, you have this thing where it's still largely that note, but there's parts of it that aren't that note.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really interesting to me. And that's it gives us that off. There's something about a tempered scale, you know, that feels, and people have talked about this a lot, you know, it feels somewhat restrictive and... But, you know, we sort of like dwell in the off-kilter kind of like dreamy nightmare feeling, and I love that.
Well, I think, you know, that kind of dissonance or things being the right note, it's very much a John Cage thing as well, you know, that, you know, obviously he did that, like, the, not obviously, he did the prepared piano, and, you know, you've got all the notes and all the white notes, all the black notes, and they're all evenly placed, but he was sort of interested in what was in between and that kind of thing. And, you know, in the same way as, you know, when I think about movies, I think about that a movie is an edit of 1.5 hour edit, 1.5 hour edit of a world that is going on the whole time, but you choose to remove the boring bits, like when they're having a panini or if they're on the loo. And you include the bits where they're running mostly and swearing, edit. And I think John Cage was sort of interested in, you know, the panini and the swearing, edit. Actually, you know, Warhol as well, you know, he was interested in, you know, long shots of something that, edit, that is static and supposedly just not moving, like the Empire State Building. But in fact, it is moving all the time because of time and space. And our relation to it in time and space, edit, you know. And then he also made that film of John Giorno sleeping, you know. It's like, well, who wants to watch someone sleeping? Well, it was a edit. He's making the point that there's a world all the time and we choose to make our edits, and they're often only five, they're always of even length. And one thing I don't like about feature films is they always make their edits about the same length. Edit. That's not real life, and that's what I love about.
No, about Warners.
Yeah, well, I love David Lynch.
One, you know, those movies that are one continuous shot or a scene, like, that's pretty amazing. It's choreographed instead of a edit, cut up. Edit.
I remember I was in Newcastle AV Festival, and it was a John Cage AV Festival in 2012. Mm-hmm. ASLSP, it's as slow as possible, and James Benning was invited as the artist, one of the artists showing his films. And there's one he made called Nightfall, and it's a one shot facing into a wood, and it starts off light and then it gets dark, and so the audience all comes in the movie theater where you're sitting, and you know that when by the time you leave it's going to be dark outside. But what was hilarious is my husband Peter came along, and he had just got off the train, and he was all kind of wound up from the 3-hour journey, and he comes in and sits with us, and he's like, so what's going to happen now? It's like, oh, it's going to get dark and we have to sit here and nothing's going to happen. And we couldn't leave either because James Benning was on the road behind us, full stop.
Trapped. That's what people were trapped in your art this week.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I was thinking that, like, as far as the spaces in between things, you know?
Yeah.
I was thinking that was, like, that was why, I know that's why I was interested and why I was there, was not the content of the conversation so much as the conversation itself being the thing.
Yeah.
And just being immersed in it, and that wonderful, you can't recreate the self-consciousness of meeting a person for the first time.
No.
And that all these complicated things you do to sort of suss out who they are and how they see you. And, you know, what I call the Ben Sparks paradox, because he's the first person to ever say out loud to me, you just like me because I like you.
Right.
And we've that it's this sort of emergent property. And you're not sure where it comes from, right? But you're looking, does that person like me? Are we vibing? And you only get that really, you know, pure in its pure form that one time. And I was just really grooving on that part of it. And anytime, also, something I find exquisite is when I hear a misunderstanding that nobody else hears.
Yeah.
Like, someone asks a question, someone else answers it, and you're not talking about the same thing, and only I know that.
Oh, I'll tell you one, actually. One person that we spoke to is a philosopher, and he said that actually it's been worked out that actually everything in the end comes down to the table. And thankfully, the other three of us didn't mention, you know, the four-legged table, because that wasn't what he meant.
I know what he meant. Like a table, like a chart that has more than one.
Oh, and I know for the rest of my life, I'll be like, oh.
I won't say the person's name. I'll just say Jazz Hegel. That's yes. the way
oh,
I think
God,
of that
yeah.
individual.
And actually, Jazz Hegel, who we met, we're not going to mention people's names because although it's recorded, it's a private thing, really, wasn't it? You know,
yeah,
but like
yeah.
he, even though I'm going to broadcast it everywhere eventually,
but, people will know eventually. But we know when we're talking about meeting them, we should give them
yeah,
pseudonyms.
But
Jazz
he was,
Hegel, yeah.
He was talking in a very kind of loose way, in the same way that I go, well, you know, everything's like that. And he said, oh, shut up. You know,
right.
but I wasn't saying about him. I said about me that you go shut up. But I wasn't saying shut up to him because I thought it was fantastic the way he was talking with his associations, you know, that are actually really malleable, and the kind of thing that you can, if you close your eyes, it helps because
yes.
you know that it's really profound what he's saying, because you know it's on the edge of comprehensibility in terms of the way language and the spoken language works, is that with language we can only just sometimes begin to explain things because they're profound or they're a deeper reality, an ungraspable reality that actually is we are from and go to. But as soon as you speak the words, you're the finger on the moon, and you've got an acknowledgement that you've become one stage removed from that thing.
Erlanger, out into the rolling out of time. The moment is stretched into the Erlanger moment. Because Erlanger is a German word that means stretching the moment beyond what you could possibly never want to even deserve, even if you wanted it. Back to front, back inside, back to front, back inside. Oh, please don't let me be. Oh, please don't let me see. A brother is not for hugging unless you manage to enfold it to the moment and you hold it to the moment, which you deserve to share with no one but yourself. And there is other people around. Who are you going to involve this time? Individualism has become a crime inside the heart of morals, but not inside the world. And now there's more that I could even bear to have to drink, because I'm flying! I'm flying! I'm flying away from here. My brother has hugged me to my ear, and I couldn't bear to stay another moment right here. Give me a moment. I need to decide whether to get back on the plane, because this mother-brother situation is driving me insane.
You know, the narcissism of small differences that,
yes.
you know, you can basically be doing something very similar to someone else, and you have a choice of whether you together you go, wow, isn't this great, we're doing similar things, or oh, actually I don't like what you do, so therefore I don't like what I do and what's going on, go away.
Yeah. No, I understand. If there was a guy doing radio calling himself Country Wheat,
yeah,
I think I'd be like, hey now.
And yeah.
Now, this brings us to something else. So if there was, let's say, maybe it's even in like the New Jersey, New York City area, so it's extra right in, and then Country Wheat's on there, and Country Wheat's doing something real similar.
Well, on WNYC, there's Country Wheat.
Right.
Country Wheat. Hey, the old one, this is Country Wheat. Today we're going to talk about, I guess, you know, Hegelian philosophy.
And then... the person who's on also on that schedule is don't do it like us with don't or why us.
But well, what I'm saying is like, can I say we were talking about being able to be about people stealing your stuff or saying that's you're taking
saying,
my
that's mine.
Right, like there's no way I could be able to say that. That's the thing, like even and. Yeah, let's.
I'm Bob Country Wheat. I got a sidekick. Here's my sidekick, you know, Heidegger.
Yeah. Hey, yeah. Everybody, I'm Heidegger.
Yeah.
So I wonder.
Butchie Heidegger. Oh, Butchie, Jesus.
That's so blatant. But here's the thing, like everything, I stole everything, I'm pretty sure. I mean, you know, I can't. If you steal from a thief, I'm not going to be like you know, one of those thieves, like a lot of rock and roll thieves did that. They stole from folk music or blues or something, and then they got mad when they get stolen from. I don't want to be like one of those rock and rollers that steals from people folk or blues and then get complains that they're stolen from. So Country Wheat, bless your heart, go for it.
Well, my catchphrase is not bless your heart, but bless your stomach
or something.
But also, I think, you know, when things are slightly different, you know, it's that joke about, oh, there's proof that we're living in the Matrix. And that was something I get when we were talking about it a few times. Like, you know, if a British person visited an American place, we've got all this stuff that's the same, but then it's a little bit different, you know, like the Robin. Okay, so there's the Robin here is a little brown bird with a little red front, right?
Right, right.
But then your Robin, of course, is bigger and doesn't look anything like our Robin, but they're both called a Robin. And there's lots of things like that. And it always makes me laugh when, you know, you find these things that have got the same name, but they're completely different.
Right. No, it's true. Yeah, and all those slight variations are wonderful. I always feel like I want to meet other people that have a similar background, but maybe a different life path. You go, there's me over there doing something different.
Well, that's the point of the conversation pit, isn't it?
Right.
That's it does exactly feel what like, it is.
You know, let's say we all are one. Well, we've all been scattered to the winds to collect things, and it's nice when we get together and we debrief. What did you learn out there? And also, I think, you know, some of the people we spoke to were young, but a few of them were older than us, if that's humanly possible. Mm-hmm. And then, and so they are at that, you can say, what did you learn? I know you're still learning, but, you know, you have an arc of a life that you're bringing there, too. So as we're talking about things, there's a whole lifetime of decisions and consequences that are there bearing witness. And that is fantastic. I feel so lucky when that happens.
Yes.
And then, you know, and then I share what I like to share. And it doesn't always, you know, accumulate into expertise necessarily. But
no.
I always think as somebody who's, I don't like to say I'm not a storyteller. You know, I detest that. I don't know what I am. I'm, you know, whatever. Like, if you've traveled, so tell me an account of your travels. And you expect a wonderfully colorful, possibly embellished story of people that have faces on their chests, that kind of thing. And that's where I'm coming from, I think, is, you know, to have something to say poetically. Poetically comment and entertain convey my experience and feelings through that.
Well, I think we were in there for the table with four legs. That we
definitely,
you know,
because we ate it, we were noshing constantly. There was constant grazing and noshing.
Yeah,
and that was like that. That was the focus of our. You know, we were into that a lot too, and
exactly.
we were mic'd with lavs. Those little clip-on mics that you put on your lapel, those lapel mics. So and yet we still wanted snacks, and so we were debating whether, you know, to crunch on the crisps and various other things right by the mic. And I decided that it was a good thing. And that we should just crunch away. And I even would move the mic up to my mouth if I was eating something more quiet, like a grape.
That
I'd want to make sure that you could hear it, that there was a kind of slurping, like you were, right? Like you were listening to Garrison Keillor's saliva on Prairie Home Companion.
That was the first day as well. It's the first day we'd just get down in the pit and like barely got off the plane. And Kevin had the great idea that he was going to bring lots of crisps for the conversation. And and you're sitting next to me going crunch, crunch, crunch. And at one point, I couldn't even hear what the guest was saying. All I could hear was crunching, crunch, absolute crunching. And do you remember also what I said to you right at the beginning? The guests had just come in, and obviously we know each other pretty well, you and I.
I think you yelled,
I said, shut up.
Thank you again. You are listening to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White on WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in Rockland County in New York City, New York, and online, WFMU.org. Worldwide, freeform radio, the way it's found to be anything against that.
Shout out to my brother, bass guy, man. I just wanted to say that.
Shout out to my brother, bass guy.
You know, man, just right now, this goes deep, man. It can go real deep.
Yeah, it can.
Right now, I feel like it's a lot of things going on with me right now. Yeah,
I feel like,
yeah,
I feel like, I don't know.
When I woke up today, I felt like, fuck the world, nigga, fuck the world, nigga, fuck the world, nigga, fuck that bitch and fuck that nigga, yeah.
Man,
fuck that nigga,
I don't trust nobody.
Fuck that bitch too, bro.
Nigga, fuck the world, nigga, I don't trust nobody, nigga.
Nigga, fuck everybody, nigga. I woke up today feeling like everybody out trying to get me.
Everybody wants something from me, man.
Who can I trust? Who can I trust?
I can't trust nobody no more,
man. I just feel like I can't trust nobody no more.
I just feel like I can't trust nobody no more.
I just feel everybody out trying to get something from me.
Just feel like everybody wants something from
me. I ask myself, who can I trust?
Who can I trust?
I ask myself, who can I trust?
I can't trust nobody no more.
Nigga, fuck him, I don't trust him. Nigga, fuck her, I don't trust her. Yeah, I don't trust that bitch. Nigga, fuck that bitch.
Nigga, fuck that bitch, nigga. I don't give a fuck no more.
I feel like everybody out. I feel like everybody wants something from me.
Life isn't fair, man. Fuck this bitch, man.
These days I just been feeling like fuck everybody. I don't want no friends.
I
don't want no friends. No.
I don't want no friends.
I just can't explain.
I just really can't explain this feeling that I'm feeling right now.
Man, it's such a powerful feeling.
I really can't explain this feeling that I'm feeling right now.
Right now, yeah.
I know it's a lot of sucking niggas hating on me.
I know
it's a lot of niggas that wanna see me fall. They wanna see me fall. They wanna see me fall. I know it's a lot of niggas out there that want me dead.
I know
it's a lot of niggas out there that want me dead. Yeah, they wanna see a nigga dead.
Oh.
I pray to God. I ask God for forgiveness. God,
please forgive me.
Lord, I know I sin. Lord, I know I sin.
I'm sorry, God. Please forgive me.
I just feel like sometimes, why me?
Why me, God?
Why me? Why me? What did I do to deserve this?
What did I do to deserve this?
And my life, it goes so deep. My life, it goes so deep. Don't nobody really know about my life.
Don't nobody know about my life, man.
Sometimes I just want to give it all up and cry. Sometimes I just want to throw it all down and cry. Sometimes I just want to give up. I just don't want to keep going.
Sometimes I just want to give up.
I ask God to show me the way. I ask God to show me the way. I ask God, why me? Why? Sometimes I just want to throw it all down and cry. Sometimes I just want to give it all up and cry. I ask God why they hate on me. I ask God why they throw negativity in my life.
Yeah.
Why, God, why? I ask God why they kill my brother.
It seems like nobody can understand me.
I ask my mama and she don't understand. I ask my father and he don't understand. Sometimes I feel like, why am I here?
Why am I here?
Sometimes I feel like, why am I here? Why was I put on this earth? Why, God, why? Sometimes I stare in the mirror and cry.
Sometimes I
stare in the mirror and I cry. Sometimes I stare in the mirror and I cry. Can you hear me crying? Can you hear me crying? Can you hear me crying?
Man, fuck this shit, man. Fuck the world, nigga.
I ask myself why.
Life isn't fair.
Why me?
Life isn't fair.
Why was I put in this situation? Why was I put in this position?
Why?
God, please answer me why. All I try to do is the best. All I try to do is the best. I got 4 brothers and 1 sister. I just try to provide for them.
That's all.
I'm just trying to live my life. Why won't they just let me live my life?
Why?
Sometimes I ask myself, why? Why won't they just let me live? Sometimes I wanna tell my fans the real story. Sometimes I really wanna tell them about my life, but I don't think they can handle it.
I don't think they can.
I don't think they can handle the truth.
I don't.
They can't handle the truth.